We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Artist of the day, learning to fly.
Hook me up a new revolution.
Yes, please.
This one is a lie.
I had never heard the term speed cuber. And I'm going to be honest, I thought the Rubik's Cube died with the Atari. But apparently not. The Rubik's Cube is still around, and there are competitions. I mean, it's like, wow, Peter!
It's global.
And one of the greatest speed cubers in America, Christopher Olson, is joining us on the hotline. Hello, Christopher.
Hi, Christopher.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I am so fascinated, and I told Scott I loved this documentary so much, I watched it twice, once alone and once with my daughter. And
awesome.
It's just amazing. You were a producer on the show. You were the director of photography, I believe, and you are also a speed cuber, correct?
Yes.
So tell me about your world records or your records.
Yeah, so I've been competing for about 11 years or so, and after my fourth year, I believe, of competing is when I broke my first world record, which was for the 2x2 event. In a competition, you'll do five solves, and there's two types of world records. There's like the fastest solve ever done and the fastest average time of your five solves in that round.
Got it.
So I held the average, and the last world record that I held was an average time of 1.71 seconds.
So how old were you when you first figured out that you could do this?
Wait, we just buried the lead. You solved it in 1.17 seconds?
The 2x2.
Oh,
yes, the 2x2, which is the smaller one than the regular one everyone's used to.
And your best time with the regular one is what, Christopher?
Officially, it's like 6.37 seconds.
6.37 seconds.
For all six sides?
Yes, you have to solve the whole thing.
In 3.6 seconds?
6.37.
Six point three seconds. Well, and I'm not impressed.
So wait, go back. How old were you when you first figured out that you were really good at this?
I started doing it when I was 12, but there was never really a, like, I didn't wake up one day and was like, oh man, I can like solve a Rubik's Cube. I spent like a day watching tutorials, and then once I solved it, I was a competitive kid. So I was like, oh, I wonder if I could get good at this. And then I found out there were competitions, and they were just a lot of fun to go to, and I just kind of kept going with it from there.
Can I ask you a question? Don't get insulted.
Go for it.
Are you a nerd?
I am most definitely a nerd. I grew up my entire childhood being a nerd.
But Christopher, in the documentary Speed Cubers, there are children of all ages from all over the world, all backgrounds, both boys, girls. The one thing they have in common is they're all very young. There was no one there like at age 40 doing speed cubing.
So at competitions, there are people, like especially at that World Championships in the documentary, there were tons of people who were older, but they generally aren't solving it, you know, nearly as quickly as the younger people.
Well,
but
we've lost a step.
Yeah,
okay,
we've lost some stuff.
I'm sorry that we've lost a step.
Yeah, but it is primarily younger people. I think the average age right now is like around 14. And typically the people who are at their peak or like world champion status are probably around early 20s or just before 20.
And so tell everyone, if they've not seen the documentary, about the beautiful story between the two boys who meet on this world stage.
Yeah, it's really an incredible story. It focuses on two people. You have Felix Zemdegs from Australia, who is about 23. He has been the undisputed king of speed cubing for 10 years. One thing actually the documentary doesn't really focus on a lot is, I mean, it does talk about how good he is, but like Felix is literally like the Michael Jordan of speed cubing. He's held 130 world records. The next best person is 40 world records, and Felix has held 40 world records in one event. Like,
wow.
He's literally the best there will ever be, basically. And then you have Max Park, who in the last couple of years has come up and started to get really good. But Max Park also has severe autism. When he was a kid, his parents couldn't get him to open a water bottle. Like, his finger coordination wasn't good enough to, you know, take a water bottle and open the cap. So they got him into speed cubing, you know, to work on his finger dexterity. So the whole documentary focuses on their two relationships and just kind of how they came together and how Felix has been a big role model for Max and how it's impacted both of their lives in significant ways.
Is there money to be made in speed cubing?
Up until the last couple of years, not really. You know, at the World Championships, you might win like a couple thousand dollars or something. But in the last couple of years, it started to become a lot more mainstream. Red Bull started picking it up, and there was a lot more prize money in that. And now Rubik's is a lot more involved with the sport.
Wait. Was Rubik's not involved in the sport?
Right?
And don't call it a sport. It's a, come on.
Yeah, they weren't very involved up until, I mean, they would sponsor like the World Championships, but beyond that, they weren't really around. But now they've taken a much bigger role, which means there's a lot more money.
That's like Callaway not being involved in the PGA or something.
Right.
So Rubik's is still around.
Oh yeah.
The company Rubik's is still around.
So Christopher, Can you explain for people who've never seen one of these competitions? You don't get to see the cube. It's like hidden. And then how many seconds do you get to look at it before you start your clock?
Mm.
Yes. So you get 15 seconds to look at the cube before you have to set the cube back down and start yourself.
And let me ask you this, because, you know, I had a Rubik's cube when I was a kid, and I could solve one side and like half of another. But then when I would try to solve the other side, I would screw up the side I already solved. Yeah. What is going through your brain as you're looking at that cube for 15 seconds? Because it's clearly not what was going through mine.
So the biggest misconception that everyone has when they look at a Rubik's cube is they go, okay, I need to solve it in sides. I need to solve side 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But you actually solve it in layers. So you solve the whole bottom layer, then the middle layer, and then the top layer is how you're supposed to approach it, which me telling you that isn't going to make it super easy to go solve now, but that is how you're supposed to approach it. So as you're solving it, every time you do something, you're pretty much messing up whatever it is you did last.
Right.
You mess it up, and then you fix it while putting in the next piece at the same time.
But is it like there's a squirrel going through the cage in your brain as you're trying to figure this out?
There are definitely a lot of thoughts going through your head while you're solving it. Because the thing is, as you're, you know, looking at this, there are millions of ways you could approach it to solve this. You might do one thing that is a shorter amount of moves, but in the long run, it makes the whole solve slower because it gave you worse cases overall. Or maybe you do something that's longer, but is more friendly for your hands to turn quickly. So there's like a lot of thoughts going through your head in the span of a couple seconds.
And Christopher, I have so many questions about this. So when you're on the world stage competing with the Rubik's Cube, Does everyone get the same jumbled up cube in the same sequence jumbled up to make it fair, or is it random?
Yes, everyone does get the same scramble. There would probably be a lot of rioting if they were not the same.
so they are the same.
The cubers are rioting. Yeah, they're the same.
You even laugh like a nerd.
Oh, I love you, Christopher. What is the world's fastest time then for the regular 3x3 Rubik's Cube that we've all seen on the world stage?
3.47 seconds.
3.47?
Yes.
Solved. All six sides. Yes.
Who has that? Yes.
His name is Yusheng Du, and I believe he's from China.
Wow.
I'm not 100% sure about where he's from, but I think China.
So when did it get from 6 seconds to 5 to 3? Because in the documentary, everyone that's winning is around 6 seconds.
Right. So that comes back to how I was explaining earlier. There's the single world record solve and then like your average time. So when you win a competition, you're winning it based off of your average time. So you don't win, like if I got 1 4-second solve, I don't win. I have to perform well over all five solves.
Got it.
And then they average out my time. So, it's kind of like with Usain Bolt. If he runs the world's fastest time, not at the Olympics, he's probably not going to run that again at the Olympics. Like, he might run the fastest time at the Olympics, but it's not a world record speed.
Right.
Same thing for these competitions.
Okay.
Hey. I kind of want him to stick around. I am so fascinated by, we've talked about a lot of things on this show, Christopher. I'm telling you, I don't know that we have ever talked about the Rubik's Cube on this show.
I guarantee you we haven't. I've been on the show for 14 years.
All right. Will you stick around just for a couple minutes?
Yeah, sounds good.
It's not like you have anything else to do.
Oh, he's cubing.
What are you, gaming right now? Or?
You know what? Christopher, do a lot of these people end up going on to like engineering?
Honestly, it's a lot of different backgrounds. There's a lot of people I know that work at Google, Microsoft, math, science, engineering. Like, it's really all over the place.
Crystal meth?
No, they don't do that.
Maybe not that.
To go at that speed, you have to be on crystal meth.
I don't think so.
Oh.
These are children, Scott.
Okay. I'm goofing on him.
Be nice.
Stop taking this so serious. We're talking about a Rubik's Cube. It's
Rubik's, I believe.
I just said Rubik's. 576-7798.
Are you guys fighting about a Rubik's Cube?
Yes.
Will win the world championships today?
Felix Zemdegs.
Please welcome Felix Zemdegs. Come on, Felix.
Pretty much one of the greatest cubers of all time.
I definitely say Max Park.
He's dominating every event, and he's showing that a person with a disability can be just as good as anyone else.
All right, joining us is one of the guys behind that documentary, Christopher Olsen. They're called Speed Cubers. And they have an ability that you and I do not have, ladies and gentlemen. They can solve a Rubik's Cube in less than 10 seconds. And so is it Max Park that they keep talking
Max
about?
Max Park.
Yes.
Yes. He's from Australia. So they say Max Park.
and is he the best?
So right now I would say Max is pretty much viewed as the best. It's kind of hard to weigh. Like, currently, he's the best, but everyone views Felix as, like, the all-time best, basically.
Yeah. So is it weird, Christopher, that every publication in America is writing about this? Salon.com calls your Speed Cubers documentary engrossing and something that reminds us what we are missing without the Olympics. The reviews have been incredibly positive for this.
It has been absolutely insane seeing the feedback on this project. It was one of those things while it was being made that, like, at least me, I really had no idea how it was going to be received. Like, I think this story is, like, a very beautiful human story that just, like, you can't watch this and not, like, feel something. Like, it's such a great story. But it was one of those things where it's about speed cubing. Not that many people know about it. And it was kind of like, well, I don't know. Maybe people will like it. Maybe they won't. But it has I've not even seen a single negative review of this thing yet.
Christopher, tell Scott real quick, because Max Park, who is considered the best in the world, has autism. He is, 18 years old now?
Yes.
He's 18 years old, but his father makes the comment during the documentary that his emotional age is closer to 7, 8, or 9 years old, Scott.
Hmm.
And the Rubik's Cube and these competitions brought something out in Max that his family did not see before, Christopher.
Yes. Yeah, it's been crazy seeing Max's growth. I've known Max for about 3 years or so now. And even in that 3 years, that's basically about the time Max went from nobody knowing who he was to being the world's best. And he's changed a lot even in that time. Just watching his social skills like skyrocket has been crazy. Like he's changed so much as a person. And it's crazy to see that came from a Rubik's Cube and also Felix as a person.
Well, it is a beautiful documentary. Please watch it with your family on Netflix.
What's it called?
It is called Speed Cubers.
Speed Cubers.
And Christopher, congratulations. You guys really have done something amazing here.
Thank you.
Hey, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
All the best to you and your family, okay?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, be well, my friend. That is Christopher Olsen. The documentary is called Speed Cubers, and you can find it on Netflix. Welcome back. Hey, don't forget, we're doing Festivus Friday coming up at 5 o'clock. That's brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Story here from CBS News. For any of you who have worked or work in the restaurant or bar business, this will be of import to you. For those of you who go and frequent restaurants or bars, which many of you are not able to do right now, this will also interest you. Of the 23 million people who lost a job early in the pandemic, more than 6 million, so about a fourth, worked in the food and beverage industry. A recent report predicts up to 230,000 restaurants. Listen to this. A recent report predicts up to 230,000 restaurants could permanently shutter by the end of 2020. Now restaurant owners have banded together to form the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which has the backing of the U.S. culinary industry's top names and is now lobbying Congress to pass a $120 billion bailout for small and mid-sized restaurants. So not your Applebee's, not your Chick-fil-A's. These are mom and pops. Quoting here from chef and TV host Tom Colicchio, "This is everything that will give us the necessary lifeline to get through this period, but also to get slightly past here and get open. And so when we finally do have a vaccine," continuing the quote, "and when the country finally opens up and people feel comfortable coming back, we'll have restaurants to get back to." The group launched a new TV ad starring Morgan Freeman aimed at urging Congress to help these restaurants survive the coronavirus pandemic. I would love to hear from those of you who either own or work in small mom-and-pop restaurants. Are you going to survive? How will you survive? The takeout stuff or the run in and grab it and leave, that's not going to cut it. I've been to 2 restaurants since March. One was a lunch date with Brian Busby, and we went to, not Main Street Cafe, what is it called? Is it Main Street Cafe?
Grand Street?
Grand Street Cafe, yes. And we were talking with one of the waiters there, and Brian asked him, he said, "How's business been?" He says, oh man. And then Kelly and I went to Grunauer's down in the Garment District.
Okay.
And everybody was seated super far apart from each other. And I just don't know how you guys are holding on. I really don't. I don't know how you're holding on.
I think some of them are. I think it's been extraordinarily difficult. There were certain restaurants that had huge carryout sales. And I spoke with a restaurant manager Wednesday night, and he said business is almost back to what it was.
Really?
Yes. And I don't know if this has to do with longevity, like how, you know, are some of the more established places around town faring better because they're more established? I don't know.
I mean, when I drive by McDonald's, they don't seem to be doing too bad.
Well, I had Torchy's Tacos last night for dinner.
Oh, Mackie swears by that place.
And they opened up in the middle of the pandemic, and they appeared to be doing fine last night.
What restaurant was that?
Torchy's Tacos.
Torchy's Tacos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mackie won't shut up about that
place.
Oh,
my God, it's so good.
Is it really?
It's delicious.
Where is it?
In the Ward Parkway Shopping Center, in the new, like, pavilion area. Have you seen the new pavilion?
No.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Okay, apparently I mispronounced the guy's name and everybody's up my butt about it. It's Tom Colicchio. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't sit around and watch food preparation shows all night. If Top Gun's on, yeah, I'll watch that.
Seem like a Food Network guy.
I really don't. Telephone number here is 576-7798. You know, Lucky's admission looks like it closed.
Yeah.
Drove by there the other day. And it doesn't look good. I mean, that was one of the most popular restaurants in this area. I mean, how do you hold on? Those of you who are like Urban Prairie, the coffee shop, they seem to be doing okay over there on Johnson Drive. I know I butchered the guy's name. I'm sorry. Come on. Lighten up.
It's Friday. Stop it. Stop it.
Everybody's just up my butt today. Jeez.
Or you've got something up there.
What the hell was that supposed to be?
Ding, ding, ding.
My mom and dad are not fighting. Hey, Aaron, what up, man?
Well, you know, they're up your butt because you're number two. Anyhow, I hope you guys had a good week. Let me get that in now.
Yeah, we did. So, thanks, man.
The one mom and pop restaurant that I go to quite a bit, and I won't say where it's at or what it is, but it recently had to close temporarily because one of their workers did test positive for COVID. So they are going to shut down so that they can take care of their employees and make sure, you know, they don't, you know, infect someone else. And, you know, they've been struggling. And a pizza place that we go to quite a bit, again, mom and pop, they've done fairly well because the community supports them.
Yeah.
They use them, you know, religiously, you know, instead of going to more of the chain restaurants, which some of those are, you know, family owned as well. But, you know, I think it all depends on whether that family or the mom and pop place owns their business, their building, or if they have to rent it, or, you know, there's a lot of scenarios that go into it. And then also just, do your customers, are they loyal? You know, will they still come and take it out and take care of them? Like, I always tip, you know, there's a little diner downtown. When I go in there, and it's on a rarity, but I always tip them 10, 20 bucks on a regular, you know, lunch meal.
Yeah.
You know, just
good for you. Good for you.
I haven't gone in there very often, but I don't do that all the time. It's just specific places I do that. So, but I hope you guys have a good weekend, and, you know, people suck, so don't worry about it, Scott.
Oh, it's fine.
You too.
I grew thick skin a long time ago. Somebody writes in, we are a vendor for restaurants here in Kansas City, Dana. Mm-hmm. We are down over 63%. Mm. It was even worse when it started. Thank you for bringing this up. They, the restaurants, the mom and pops, need all the help that they can get.
Even if you have to carry out because you're still not comfortable going into a restaurant, do it.
Let's go to Rosetta in Holden, Missouri. Hello, Rosetta.
Hi there. How are you two?
Well, hi,
we're
good.
We're doing well. Thank you.
Good, good. It's not a mom-and-pop restaurant, but I think the Hawaiian Brothers in Lee's Summit is doing very well. I believe it opened after in Lee's Summit. It opened after the pandemic started, and a lot of times I drive by there, lines are full, people are inside, looks like they're doing great.
Good.
Have you tried
Hawaiian Brothers?
Yeah, but here's my question, and I'm not denying what you're saying at all, Rosetta, but how many times have you gone to a restaurant, Scott, and it's always packed?
Hawaiian Brothers is a chain, by the way.
And then they go under, and you go, how in God's name did they go under? That place was always packed.
So that's what I think about Lucky's.
I say that all the time. Place was always packed. Place was always packed. It goes under. And I would love to hear from our restaurant owners on this. I think it is so hard to make it in that business that you can be packed all the time. But with your employment costs and your overhead costs, and then you throw in COVID, even places that are packed can struggle.
I could never figure out, honest to God, I don't mean to keep going back to Lucky's, but it's the local restaurant in my neighborhood.
The building is also huge, Scott.
Yes, it is.
You got to look at the square footage, and somebody's got to pay for that square footage.
I just couldn't believe it when I saw it shutter. I was like, is it because of what opened up behind it? The Peanut. The Peanut opened up behind it. And did that take away all their business? Or, I mean, what happened?
I think it's just that hard to make it in that industry anyway. And then during a pandemic.
Well, restaurants do run on a pretty
thin margin.
Mm-hmm. It's like a grocery store.
Yeah.
Robin in Grandview. Hello, Robin.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Oh, what a beautiful day. Okay. So my brother owns Planet Sub. And I spoke with him recently, and he said that, no matter what you are, a small business owner, a franchise owner, or a corporately owned business, the bottom line is that are you providing safety, good food, and a means for people to be able to properly get their food? And because of coronavirus, are you able to provide a business, provide service to those people in a way that they feel safe? So it's not always about the quality of the food, I think, because McDonald's, Taco Bell, Burger King, all these corporately owned, national and worldwide companies are flourishing.
Yeah.
But what's the real question here? Is it the quality of the food, or is it about the safety of being able to acquire said food?
Wait, your brother owns Planet Sub?
Yes, sir.
That's where I got lunch today.
I want a creamy club so bad right now. I cannot even stand it.
Oh my God. I had a creamy crab today. It was delicious.
Yes. So that means my brother has explained to me, his name is Sean Kelly, and he has told me that the bottom line is that it's not necessarily about the food, the quality, or the convenience of it. It's about with the way the world is now. Are you going to be able to provide me good food in a safe manner, and that's the bottom line.
Okay, now wait.
Is it going to be safe?
You provide sprouts with bacon on my creamy club?
Exactly.
Yeah.
now, wait. Let me test you on this, because Planet Sub opened in Lawrence. And it was... Hang on. And it was originally known as what?
Yellow Sub!
And how did you spell it?
Yellow space SUB. My brother bought the rights to the Yellow Sub menu.
I love it, and I refuse to call it Planet Sub. I still call it Yellow Sub because I love Lawrence Sally.
Yeah, it's delicious food.
What street was the original Yellow Sub located
on?
I'll tell you what it is now. It's the Oread now.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It was on 23rd Street.
No, it was not.
It was on 23rd Street. Yes, it was. It was on top of the hill.
Well, my yellow sub is now the Oread. It's no longer there.
Okay, well, it was the original Yellow Sub, and there was no W on it because of a Beatles copyright infringement.
Yes, you're right.
It was Yellow Sub.
And my brother, the first place that he opened up as Planet Sub, quote unquote, was out off 122nd in Metcalf.
Duh.
And, I'm just saying, but the biggest deal here is that as a small business owner, which now he is franchised out, the biggest thing is that if you want to go out to eat, what do you want to do? With the coronavirus. You want to make sure that whatever food you buy is going to be safe, and that the person that you go out to eat with and the service that you are receiving is safe.
Hey, Robin, we got to run. You have a wonderful weekend, okay?
You too, and you guys have a blessed one.
All right, be safe.
You
and
too,
be well.
And you are wrong. That is the original. It is now the Oread. The one on 23rd Street came after.
You just can't stand it.
I can't stand it because
Did I spell it right? Did I spell it right?
We're not talking about the spelling.
We're
talking about the location. And the first one was next to the Glass Onion at the very top of that hill. And it is now the Orient.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you.
You need help that I cannot provide.
It was not the one on 23rd. I just want you to acknowledge that.
I want you to acknowledge that this was skin cancer.
Okay, the nipple on your arm was precancerous.
And you thought it was not.
And I am glad that you went to get it checked out.
I am glad that you found where the original yellow sub was.
I didn't have to find it. I knew it was always there.
I am glad that you two are looking at the clock.
I'm still alive, but I'm barely breathing. Just praying to a God that I don't believe in. 'Cause I got time while she got freedom. 'Cause when a heart breaks, no, it don't break even. The best days will be some of my worst.
You say you and Joe went to your first date at the crossing?
At the crossing next to the Glass Onion, next to Yellow Sub with Libby. Yeah.
You went to your first date at the crossing.
Well, it wasn't a date. We all just met there. And it was like the first night we had all been out, which is how I know so much about Yellow Sub, because his brother also worked there.
Okay. There's, I can't believe this is so dumb.
How many people are arguing about the original?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, it's all over the text line.
The text line has exploded.
Telling you.
Arguing whether it was the one next to the crossing or the one on 23rd Street that was the first yellow sub.
I spent a whole lot of time at that location.
Seriously, people? Are we that drunk?
Well, no. I think people just need to get to the bottom of it.
Like right here, the first yellow sub was on 23rd Street, Dana, in Lawrence, right next to where Hastings used to be.
No. In that strip mall?
No. It was just east of Hastings. Do you remember Hastings? It was the record store.
You could rent a movie.
You could buy a CD or a tape.
If we'll have time.
I don't know if we're going to have time. Oh, did the new Motley Crue just come out? Oh, I'm going to Hastings.
The good old crossing. Do you remember the crossing? You could just dump everything on the floor because it was basically a shack.
If you could get your feet off of the floor because they were stuck.
It was a shack.
From all of that beer
that
was spilled.
I love that place.
Oh, my word.
Good times. Not looking to make this a topic, but this is just one of those stories. I mean, even the New York Daily News picked it up because it is so wowza. Did you hear a man died at the Lake of the Ozarks this week after he was struck by his own boat's anchor?
How the hell does that happen?
I don't know. 55 years old. His name was Craig Gathman. He was driving his speedboat with the anchor still in the water when the rope tension caused it to fly into the air, striking him in the head and killing him.
Oh, my word.
A Gathman, who is an Illinois resident, was driving the boat near popular Osage Beach. He is the third person to die on the lake this year.
Oh, my word. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Festivus Friday coming your way right after the 5 o'clock news. That is in 1 hour from now. The airing of the grievances, it is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, that guy over there, celebrating his one-year anniversary today on the show, is Sam Orville Stevie III. That's Dana Wright. I am Scott Parks here on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.